Welcome to Saints History, told and experienced the way God intended it, with excessive amounts of alcohol and cursing. The booze is probably bourbon because...
Other alcohols are for rich women on diets.
Now, here's your drunk Saints History host, who is...
bombed out of his gourd.
So, we do drunk history, and even though I'm way ahead and we've got episodes almost to the end of the year, we did the episode with Skooks, and people loved it. So I was like, we gotta have more guest stars. And I was like, I gotta do Bounty Gate. So who do I get? I'm like, I gotta get the guy that wrote maybe the only book, but it's the best book on Bounty Gate, even if they have multiple ones, who chronicled it. Reed Gilbert, he did Bread and Circuses. Go to Amazon, buy the book. He might not make any money, but if you want to know about Bounty Gate, read it. It's a great book. I went through and read it again. So we're doing Bounty Gate on Saints Drunk History. And look, I am shit-faced. I needed to get shit-faced for this. But me and Reed, during the week, we like, you know, talk back and forth. We planned this out a couple weeks ago, right? We booked this day.
And yeah, like 2 weeks ago. Yeah, it took a while for it to come. I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah, so, but I was like, I told Reed, I was like, I need time to like go back in your book and dive in and like make an outline because it's so much. And I sent Reed an outline. He's like, I'll send it back to you. And he tweeted out today. He's like, oh, I forgot a bunch of stuff. And Reed sent me the email. And there was like literally like six things about Bounty Gate that I had fucking forgot that are like epic major things.
It's, right, and they're just like throwaway events in during the season.
So it's so much. So we're going to try to chronicologize it and get it. So, and we have the outline. We'll go off track, of course. So we always start by the episode. What are you drinking, Reed? I started out with cinnamon schnapps. Then I went to Jack Daniel's honey. Now I'm drinking tin cup bourbon on the rocks, which I cannot recommend. I cannot recommend enough.
Dude, I mean, you're drinking like it's like week 14 of the 2015 season now.
Yeah, I know.
Right? I'm drinking Stoli on the rocks.
There you go. So let's start. Well, we could try to do it chronologically. We start Bounty Gate at the beginning. Buy Reed's book. He does a fantastic job. But it started on March 2nd. The news broke. I got it through La Conforna on Twitter. I was at a wedding. I was in a wedding, and I, like, before the wedding started, I saw it on my phone, and everybody was coming up to me like, what the fuck's going on with this Bounty Gate? And I was like, I don't know. It's, you know, I'm at a wedding. I have to catch up later. But when it broke, and you had like a day or even a little bit of time to digest it, were you like, the Saints are fucked? When, like, how fast did it hit you that the Saints were fucked?
I was confused. I mean, I remember when it happened, you know, Schefter had tweeted it out like in a series of tweets that were like really like pre-planned. They were kind of deployed.
God, we'll get to that in a second.
I remember reading it and it was just kind of confusing. I'm like, what? And I remember the first thing I thought was like, okay, they're accusing the Saints of hurting people. I was like, that's like accusing the Browns of running up the score on other people. Like, what team have you been watching, right? The Saints, that wasn't the Saints team. So I was just really kind of confused, especially because they were making such a big deal of it.
Yeah, and I thought about it and my first thought was like, well, they'll do something to the Saints. But in the 80s, man, Buddy Ryan like reveled in the bounties and like took out kickers and called Jimmy Johnson fat, and it was like, I was like, they're gonna fight it. But I have a theory that, you know, fake news is in politics, but I have a theory that Roger Goodell is the godfather of fake news. And as we get into
it's a good theory.
It's a good theory because here's my theory is Roger Goodell pre-packaged all of it, and the NFL media, they need their scoops, the Peter Kings, the Schefters, the whatever. So they don't push back. So when Goodell rolled it all out of like, we got a, you know, we'll get into it. And he rolled it out. We got a ledger. We got video. We got Vilma giving $10,000. Like all of it, the media was like, oh my God, it's all true. And like none of it was actually accurate. But why do you think... why the Saints? Because I believe there's a shit ton of teams doing this, and players even admit it. Why did the Saints get this fucking nuclear bomb dropped on them?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. There's a bunch of it. The first thing, we kind of set it aside. We maybe go back to it because everybody knows about it. It's the Viking thing. We just set that aside. So that was one of the big things. But basically, like, Goodell wanted to nail the Saints for years. because of like a pattern of recalcitrance or intransigence. They had done all kind of stuff to alienate Goodell. You know, Goodell's an authoritarian. They didn't respect him. They didn't respect his rule of law. They had Ornstein milling around the program.
They fucked him on Thursday night. Like, they wouldn't do interviews. It was like all these like little things that the Saints did to like...
The media day at the Super Bowl, they showed up an hour late. And then Peyton has to be coaxed to go to the post-game press conference, right? And he like talks about it in his book how he was, you know, not crisp, basically. So, I mean, so that was one of the reasons. Then, you know, after the NFC Championship game, Childress... 12 men in the huddle, Childress, goes and complains to the league that the Saints had a bounty on Favre, right? Because he can't accept the fact that they lost because he's a sore loser. So he goes complains to the league that the Saints have a bounty on Favre.
We didn't forget about 12 men, Brad. We'll never forget about 12 men.
Yeah, exactly. He can cry about bounties all he wants. And so, you know, they send the investigators to the Saints after the game, and the Saints just blow them off. They're all riding high from winning the Super Bowl, and the investigators go, so they blow them off. So, you know, there's that, and then, you know, the Cirullo thing when Cirullo emails them. So basically, the Saints had alienated Goodell, and he, like, really wanted to nail him. It's like the petty thief that you say, well, finally, we're just going to frame this guy for murder because we can't catch him.
Well, let's get into that. Let's get into it. First of all, Mike Cirullo was a piece of shit. Don't forget about him as a person. I'm not going to... He would, like, lie to the Saints and be like, my mom died or something. And the Saints were like, oh, okay, cool. We get that. Like, even though coaches have to work, like, 26 hours a day. You had a family member die. We'll get the Benz and Jet. We'll gas you up. You go home and take care of your business. He's like, no.
Right.
It's like he was like a total lying piece of shit.
Yeah, he had a brother-in-law who like died in Haiti. He was just a string of stuff. And the Saints fired him, right? They fire him right after the Super Bowl. And so, you know, he at least wants revenge because he says that.
Didn't get a ring. I hope he didn't get a ring. Please.
He probably got a ring.
Ah, damn
it. I mean, he was with, you know. But maybe not, but yeah, he probably got a ring.
Joe Vitt eviscerated him. Like, in a. I wish I could find the sound. Joe Vitt just, like, rushed him. Of the
right, he literally called him an idiot, like, in the testimony and calls him a liar. He went after him. They were enemies.
But go through quickly the evidence that the. Because the NFL rolled it out like that Friday, and then the next week they dropped like a bombshell like every single day of all these things they had that never came to pass. So, like, go through a couple of them that, like, the NFL said they had, and the media reported it breathlessly, and it was just totally just, it never, like, they didn't have it.
Yeah, okay. So first thing, you know, the NFL announces Bounty Gate on March 2nd. After 2 months, Ralph, they still haven't produced any evidence, right? They say they have evidence, but they haven't produced any, like, anywhere in the public. And so the NFLPA and fans and the players and even the media is like, where's the evidence? So finally they start leaking stuff out that they're just, like, literally probably just making up. Seriously, the most laughable one, and the one that's just so stupid, is the ledger, the bounty ledger. You remember the bounty ledger?
I do.
Right, like first... Like we never saw the bounty ledger. They just said the Saints had a ledger. Like, can we get, like, a screenshot at least? Let us see the ledger. As if the Saints were documenting this shit in QuickBooks or something. Right?
And they also said, like, they named specific injury for players, and they never had the video. Like, my thing was, if they'd have had the ledger, and they'd have had, like, the Saints injured this player, like, you'd have seen that video on ESPN nine gabillion times, and gabillion is not a word, but you'd have seen it, like, and they just, and the thing is, like, keep going, but, like, we'll get to the pushback in a minute, but other things that they said they had that they didn't.
But yeah, just one thing along your point right there. I mean, that's one of the main, very simple ways, you know, Bounty Gate was bullshit. But if Bounty Gate was legitimate, the NFL would have like 15 or 20 plays. Just, you know, highlights. Here's a Saints injuring this guy. Here's a Saints injuring this guy. Here's a Saints injuring. They, you know, and on like that. They don't have that. They never showed us that because it never happened. It didn't exist. So they had to make up all of this, you know, all this nonsense. So the ledger, that was like the one thing that was just such a joke. Okay, so here's the deal. They leaked this thing. They give it to Cole, Jason Cole, Yahoo, right? And Cole, he rolls up like he's goddamn Moses with the Ten Commandments. Like, boom, Ledger, totally guilty. And, of course, the thing is just riddled with errors. The game in the bounty ledger, there was two games that they identified. The first one was the Bills game in 2009. There was four players hurt. Three of them played for the Bills defense, and one of them was an offensive tackle. So three of these guys that the NFL said the Saints carted off, the Saints defense didn't even play against them because they played on the Bills defense. So everybody, like, immediately debunks this. Like, literally, like us, like morons on Twitter and on the message boards. Because you can go find the play-by-play. So the NFL leaked it. Everybody debunks it. And literally, before the night is
like,
over.
No, but wait. I want to give the Yahoos and Saints Twitter credit. Like, they debunked it and, like, warp speed. Like, Saints fans are like, okay, we'll go to the Buffalo game. Go to the play-by-play. And literally, within an hour of it breaking,
exactly.
Like, Saints fans were like, no. Try again. It was glorious.
Yeah. That was a thing. It was like, is anybody in the NFL or just anybody in the media, they just remotely paying attention? Are you just doing, like, a very baseline amount of research into what's happening? Because it's very easy to refute. But, you know, so the NFL, they end up amending the bounty ledger that same night, before the end of the night.
Like,
they amend their report. They're like, oh, totally honest mistake, guys. Sorry, oversight. It was actually the Panthers game. But, and then that turned out to be wrong, too. They later had to amend that. But, yeah. I mean, that was, you know, emblematic of the way the evidence was. They just kind of made some shit up and threw it out there.
I could see, like, Goodell yelling at an intern, like, fucking fix that ledger. God damn it. And the intern's like, What are we going to do? Fucking spin the wheel. And they spin the wheel, and it lands on the Panthers game. And they're like, find an injury from the Panthers game. My fuck, it's a Panthers. It's a defensive player for the Panthers. Ah, fuck.
Yeah, it was. They said it was the Panthers game in 2009. That's who they amended it to. And the dude that got hurt was Thomas Davis. He's backpedaling into coverage. That was one of the bounties. But then they changed it again after, you know. But,
and, you know, I wish we had, like the Saints, like, the specific people that, like, debunked the Bounty Gate stuff, because it was so, I remember, like, because I got on Twitter, like, middle of, like, 2011, so I hadn't been on Twitter that long. I remember just watching it, and I was just, like, it was, like, this whole new thing. I was, like, I was just, like, amazed that, like, all these Saints fans are, like, together, and we have this community where sometimes we fight with each other, but Saints, Saints Twitter, mostly, if you compare it to, like, other fan bases, it's really nice. Like, Astros Twitter is kind of nasty. So, like, the Saints Twitter's fun, and I was, like, this is unbelievable. I love 2012. So it was just, for me, maybe other people weren't blown away by it, but I was, like, this is the coolest thing ever. Saints fans are just, they're just chopping Goodell's knees out from under him. So
it was amazing. Hey, but here, just along those lines, Ralph, you know, Angry Who Dat, his blog, remember? He put up a blog post, like, refuting some stuff during Bountygate, and Florio, like, Mike Florio, literally was, like, citing it on Pro Football Talk.
Side note, the golden age of Saints blogging is dead. Angry Who Dat doesn't blog consistently. You don't. Juge is retired. Dave Cariello was right. Wang is retired.
Yeah,
all
once Wang hung it up, I mean, come
all
on.
All of us are gone. I'm the only one that's consistently doing it now, and I am, will frankly admit, I'm the worst writer of all you people. I just do it every week. That's my only thing, is I'm consistent, but that's a side note. So
that's
anyway.
A huge skill, man. That's hard to do.
If they go 7-9 again, I'm dead. I don't know what I'm going to do. But, so yeah, it was great. So they have all this stuff. So let's get into the people that Mary Jo White, who you just, in your book, I finally got it back. You just tear her apart. Like, just go for 5 minutes. Just explain to the people that don't know about her,
you know,
and whatever.
As they say, I'm going to explore the studio space.
Yeah.
Okay.
You go ahead.
So here's the deal. First of all, let's just clarify who Mary Jo White is, right? She's like U.S. District Attorney. She works at some big time law firm. She maybe is, or she was, the chairwoman of the SEC, like the Securities and Exchange Commission.
She was.
So, you know, she's some So at any rate, okay, so the NFL brings in Mary Jo White like a couple of months into the process, and she's there to be an independent, supposedly independent investigator and evaluator of the body of evidence that Goodell has collected, right? Goodell has collected all this evidence. He hasn't shared it with anybody. So they bring her in to review it and to basically just tell the public, hey, it's all good, right? And so she does it, and she just like, okay, she does like a teleconference, and it's broadcast on 870. I remember listening to it, just broadcast on the radio. But she's like blatantly lying. Okay, so one of the main things that she just blatantly lies about is she says during her independent investigation that Hargrove, right, admits the existence of the bounty program. Well,
we'll get to Hargrove.
He has a declaration that leaks where he like denies it, says, you know, he repeatedly denies any, you know, program in place. So she's like directly just lying about what his testimony is, right? And is there to kind of cover for Goodell. But here's the infuriating thing about Mary Jo White. She's right there 2 months in when she comes in to do the evidence, is pawned off as this independent investigator. A couple of months later, when the Saints are in court with the NFL over this, she's lead their legal team, right? She's the head fucking attorney. Real independent, guys.
And here's the thing that drove me nuts is the media... The national NFL media, and especially the local NOLA media, like they never pushed back on it. It was Twitter fans debunk stuff, but the media never took time. And here's my thing with that. Well, let's get to Joe Hummel first. He was the NFL lead investigator. He resigns 1 month into Bountygate. Explain him, and then I want to get to the media stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, Hummel, this is just a weird thing. This is just kind of a quizzical moment, right? So nobody knows who Joe Hummel is. Okay, well, nobody knows about him now, probably, and nobody really knew about him during Bountygate. He was a director of investigations. He was the NFL's, like, lead investigator. So he's the guy who's leading up the Bountygate investigation. Well, nobody knows who this dude is, but about, you know, maybe 6 weeks into Bountygate, he resigns from the NFL and leaves and goes and takes another job. And nobody would have known this, but the NFL, you know, does a news release on it. They buried the news release on a Friday afternoon, the same Friday that is the second round of the NFL draft, right? They bury it. And so you read it, and it's, you know, Jim Hummel, NFL's director of investigation, has resigned and left the league. And it was a really odd moment because this is the guy who supposedly had run the investigation and had collected all the evidence. And Bountygate is like, it's starting to gain steam and it's not looking good for the league because they haven't released any evidence. And all of a sudden this guy's gone. And it's another one of those, you know, what the fuck moments where, you know, you know something's up and you don't know what it is.
That was my first ever tweet that got a bunch of retweets. I tweeted out, what the fuck is General Hummel doing? And I tweeted out a picture of the Ed Harris from The Rock, and I got like 20 retweets. I was like, I love Twitter. Twitter's the best.
That'll get you hooked on Twitter there.
I'm still addicted to Twitter.
Yeah, so man, I'm right there with you, Ralph.
So here's the thing. I have a couple of theories, but the media never pushed back, which to me, I can't excuse the national media, but Florio did push back. I give him credit. He
definitely
did push back.
But until he made his name, man.
The national media did not. The national media didn't, and the local media didn't either. The Times-Picayune ran an editorial bashing the Saints the week right after Bounty. The local media never pushed back, but I think in part that was because the players totally were like, fuck this. NFLPA, save our ass. This is why we have a union, fight their ass. And the union did do a great job of that. But the coaches don't have a union.
Mm-mm.
And the Saints never really fought back. They didn't fight back with Goodell directly. And they didn't fight back even sort of like in the back channel, sort of like the Patriots did, like leaking stuff to friendly media.
Yeah.
Or like in Deflategate, they leaked stuff about it, and the Patriots fought that way. The Saints didn't do any of that. So your theory, like, why do you think that was?
Because ownership, man. I mean, look at why the ownership. Look at why the Patriots fought back into Flategate. It was Kraft. Kraft got up front and center and like led the charge. And was like, fuck you, Goodell, and put together all the stuff. You know, Benson, God love the guy, whatever. God hate the guy, whatever you think.
He was 85.
You know.
I'm telling you, rat's ass, what's going on?
He's like, do I still have all my money?
That's all he cares about. I'm telling you this. Benson at 85 is too old to fight back. I'm telling you, 65-year-old Benson, 70-year-old Benson would have fought like a fucking motherfucker. He was a crazy – when he was younger, he did unbelievable
stuff. Yeah, right.
Like, he cared about people washing cars. He fired people left and right with the same – but now he's 85. He doesn't fight back.
He doesn't give a shit. I think $7 billion, I'm cool.
Yeah, but I think Benson at like 65, he'd have fought Goodell tooth and nail. He'd have been like, look, dude, my coach that just won a Super Bowl, you're suspending him. I'm going to the wall with him. And I think Benson – like, God love him. He's just old now, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. The Saints got, like, waylaid, right? Mm-hmm. They got – and somebody has to stand up and, like, fight back, and it couldn't be Peyton. And, no, you know, he was an ownership thing.
No,
that's why.
Peyton and Loomis, man, it's like if me and you were going to do a TED Talk, we could do, like, our reason, like, why the coaches and executives in the NFL need a union. Bounty Gate would be, like – 1 through 10 of our PowerPoint slide. Because I'm telling you, Goodell was told Peyton, I believe this 100%. He told Peyton and Loomis, look, you don't say a fucking word or I'll end you.
Yeah, he had Peyton by the balls for sure.
And they didn't have a – I mean, you know, and I give this to Peyton, is if you listen to Peyton in interviews now, he told Dan Patrick, he's like, you don't get over losing $8 million a year.
Yeah.
Like, Peyton ain't it. He's not over that. And people that are a certain age, you know, the movie Airplane, which I love, is you don't get over Macho Grande. Like Peyton's never getting over Peyton's never getting over it. But, like, here's the thing is, like, the research, and this is what killed me about the national media. Like, in 2009, 2010, 2011, the numbers are striking. Like, the Saints didn't injure any fucking body.
Yeah,
and the national media didn't say dick about it. And it just drove me crazy.
Yeah, they injured – you know, there was a study, right, the American Enterprise Institute, which is like – you know, that's like a conservative kind of think tank kind of group whose natural inclination it is to side with big business or side with corporation. Like they would normally – you think they would side with the NFL. So they did a study of the injury data, and I read it before we got on the phone.
Yep.
I read it. It said the data-driven answer is a resounding no – as to whether the Saints injured more players than anybody else. In fact, during those three seasons that the NFL accused them of having a bounty program, they injured the fewest players except for the Chargers, right? So you were about the least likely to get hurt if you played on, against the Saints during that time, and yet the NFL accused them of having, this is their word, their bullshit word, pervasive bounty system for three seasons where they never injured anybody.
All right, we got to talk about Pamphlin.
Oh Christ!
Which we did a podcast episode where we had his cell phone number, we called it, and we left a voicemail. Which I think that was the first podcast we ever did that had over like 2,000 people listen. Which we were like, we are getting places, people. So Pamphlin releases the video, the tape of like Greg Williams just being nutso. In the 2011 playoff, but really, like the defense was fucking terrible in the 2011 playoff game.
Oh, and I mean, let me think about Pamphlin. I mean, you know, you gotta be a real asshole to try to screw over Steve Gleason.
Yeah,
especially after Gleason has like paid this guy, put his family around and been vulnerable to him. Let this guy tape every moment of his life, giving this guy access he could never dream of. Gleason legally owns the rights to that footage. He asked Pamphlin not to release it, and Pamphlin still does like a total chump.
Yeah, and I will say this, and this is one thing I loved about the Saints, and that was a really bad time for Sean Payton and Loomis. And it was. And that could be a time where like you're like, I'm out $8 million, I'm suspended for a fucking year, and they could have lashed out at Gleason and then apologized later. But they were like, this isn't Gleason. They know, and that's one thing, like, you know, but Pamphlin, like, I am so glad that that moment like didn't make him and he never became anything, like that made me so happy.
Yeah, that's what he did. I mean, and look, there's no denying that, like, what Greg Williams said did not sound good.
No,
it was like it was really bad. But this is microcosm of Bounty Gate a little bit. Like, you listen to what he said before that game. That was before the Niners playoff game that ended the Saints dynasty in early 2012. Not the dynasty, but whatever. But, you know, he gave that speech before the game. And then in the game, the Saints weren't penalized once. So, you know, he's telling them, you know, kill the head, take out Crabtree's ACL, or whatever else he's telling them. And they don't even hurt anybody.
The only motherfucker that got killed in that game was poor Pierre Thomas.
I know.
Pierre Thomas, I think, was dead in that game.
Right. So, that's literal kill the head.
So, look, Bounty Gate, it sounds miserable, but there was a lot of fun things in Bounty Gate. And I want to get to my probably this is my second favorite thing. Or wait, maybe one of my favorite things is Jonathan Vilma and his attorney were just unbelievable. Like, I loved it every time I saw Vilma and his attorney on the air. Explain to the people who maybe don't remember, it's a little foggy, how awesome they were.
Yeah, so this is kind of the way I look at it. This is like Vilma. This is like Vilma's Scarface, right? Vilma's like Scarface. Say hello to my little friend. It's Ginsburg. Ginsburg's his attorney, right? So the other players, you know, everybody's accused, right? It's Vilma. It's Will Smith. R.I.P. Will. Fujita and Hargrove, right? They're the ones that are accused. Well, Will Smith, Fujita, and Hargrove, they're represented by the union attorneys. Vilma goes and gets outside counsel, so he goes and gets Ginsburg. And Ginsburg's like, you know, kind of big-time defense attorney, and he's battled the NFL. I don't know if he's a defense attorney, whatever he is. He's battled the NFL a bunch, so he's got experience.
Ginsburg's
with him,
attorney you want. Let me
yeah,
tell
he's
you
like totally not afraid of Goodell, and like every time he'd have a press conference, it was beautiful because everything, right, Ralph? You know, we're consuming the news during Bounty Gate. It's all just like bad shit. We're just getting shelled every day, and so like once in a blue moon, Ginsburg would show up into a press conference and like just blister Goodell, calling him an asshole, and you know, saying he's violating the CBA and everything else. And it was like I wrote this to you this morning. It was like a little oasis in the desert. Give me like 2 minutes of Ginsburg.
And that's the thing that gave me confidence that like maybe it was gonna work out in the same favor. Because
exactly.
Vilma like never fucking relented. He's like 10th up, didn't happen. Ledger didn't happen. Like Vilma never gave an inch, and I was like, dude, if he won't give an inch,
right,
maybe there's like light at this end of this tunnel, man, you know. And he never relented. We'll get to Tagliabue bailing out in a second, but the other fun thing, look, 2012 was a fucking mess. I mean, the Saints had Cromer and they had Vitt. But the one interesting thing was, man, if you could go back in history, and they asked, you know, Sean Payton was like, I want Bill Parcells to be the interim coach. And Bill Parcells thought about it, but I think the main thing with Bill Parcells was if he would have taken the job, it would have reset his Hall of Fame clock.
Yeah.
And he's not in the best health, let's be honest. So I think that's the main reason he did it. But man, Reed. If Bill Parcells would have been the Saints interim coach for 2012, that would have been amazing.
Oh, that would have been amazingly fun, no question.
Because
you know, Parcells, he's also smart. He's like, I'm not walking into this fucking train wreck at my age.
Yeah, he's not. But the thing is, like, if he'd have done it, I think he would have like taken like Spags like ran the defense and it was a train wreck and Spags couldn't fix it. I think Bill Parcells would have been like, I'm gonna fix it. And maybe they'd have flipped it to 9-7, maybe they'd have made the playoffs. But like just Bill Parcells is amazing. Like, Bill Parcells' press conferences are amazing. I remember when I worked for Buddy D and I was producing, like, I would sit in for they played the Cowboys in 2004, and we got to sit in the press conference where you do it over the phone with Bill Parcells. And I remember he was just like telling media stupid questions, and I asked him, like and I was scared to death, but I asked him, like, a turnover question. And I was like, you are like your Cowboys, you're like minus eight in turnovers. Like, why is that? Like, why is that? You've been so good. Why is that? And he's like, that's a really good question. I was like, yeah. But he was like, and he threw out a stat. He's like, if you turn over the ball one more time than you're the team you're playing, you lose 75% of the time. And Bill Parcells is just so smart, and he just has no time for like dumb questions. And I feel like him dealing with the New Orleans media would have been just like, it would have been like made 2012 like 30% better, you know?
Oh yeah, it would have been amazing. There's no question. I mean, he just, even that he considered it was pretty interesting.
But then, like, then this, like, shit got crazy. Like, then the wire, like, I don't remember when it was, but they had like the wiretapping scandal. Like, John Barr was like outside the line. It's like, Mickey Loomis is wiretapping and listening to other coaches, the opposing team, and the Saints, like, went fucking full bore.
Yeah, and, like, the allegations and the wiretapping were, like, from, like, 2002 or 2004 or something, like, way back when. I mean, ESPN was just trying to generate a story, right? They were just like, here, let's get a documentary on something. And it was total, you know, it was total crap. Yeah, the Saints, like, fought back.
And
like, that was the one thing they really fought back on, like, they didn't with Bowden.
Yeah, and here's the thing, though. Like, if ESPN, like, did, like, 5 seconds of research, like, Mickey Loomis is not an X's and O guy. Like, I literally believe, like Andrew Juge, who does our podcast, I believe he knows more X's and O's than Mickey Loomis. Mickey Loomis is a fucking Mickey Loomis is a cap guy and delegates. Right. Like, Mickey Loomis, if he was listening to the fucking opposing team, he wouldn't know what it was. Like,
no, I mean,
he's not, and, you know? And, like, that was another moment where, like, yeah, like, any moment you got to stick it to Goodell, we loved it. Like, in 2012, because it was just a shit show.
Yeah, and it was rare that it happened.
It was so rare. And the funny thing with 2000, like, with all the Bountygate stuff, was, like, the Saints had this, like, hugely important offseason of, like, Breeze not having a contract, and they signed, like, a shit ton of people. They signed, like, 4 linebackers. And they did Breeze, and they had Bountygate swirling around them. Like, it was, like, people forget how, like, insane that offseason was.
Right, and I mean, Breeze, I mean, look, Tom Condon was probably giggling his ass off, right?
Oh,
that's Breeze's agent, I think, right? Because now the Saints are in freaking chaos. Peyton's gone, Loomis is about to be banished, and the Saints have probably been playing hardball with Condon for years, won't renegotiate Breeze's contract. Now Breeze just had a historic season, the Saints are fucked, and Breeze is holding out.
I know.
Condon's like, I got you by the fucking ball.
And they win the franchise tag ruling that Breeze does. It's
right, just... and that's a big thing for the union, that's a big thing for other players, because the franchise tag thing was like, okay, you can only be tagged so many times under the CBA, but it wasn't clear whether that was by over the course of your career or whether it was by just individual teams.
Yeah.
So they had to clarify that because Breeze had already been tagged by the Chargers. So at any rate, that was a big thing. I mean, that was something that would have maybe garnered some press in an otherwise normal year, that Breeze did that on the way to getting, at the time, was the biggest contract in NFL history, right? And that's just like a throwaway event again in the offseason,
like,
while everything else is going on.
It's crazy. And the thing is, the Saints, the funny thing was, going into the offseason, like, everybody was wrong. Like, fans and media, everybody was like, the Saints have got to do Breeze first, and then everybody else after that. The Saints did it the opposite way. They re-signed Colston. They let Nix leave. They got Grubbs. Mm-hmm. And then they signed Curtis Lofton, Chamberlain, who ended up not playing at all.
Yeah.
He, like, blew out his knee. And Hawthorne, who ended up
Hawthorne.
Being – like, the Saints, like, signed, like, a ton of linebackers to fix the linebacker court, and none of it worked. None of it worked.
Right.
But,
right. It generated the worst defense of all time
at
the time.
And look, this is what drives me nuts about certain – not Saints bloggers, because I feel like Saints bloggers will admit – we'll admit, and writers, I will too, like, we'll admit when we're wrong. Like, that drives me like that drives me nuts about Pelican bloggers. They like deny like they're like, oh, I didn't like Gentry. I'm like, yeah, I saw the tweets and the articles. I'm like, we Saints fans were pumped about Spags. Let's not even pretend.
The whole point of being a blogger is so you can be wrong without consequence.
Yes.
If you're in the fucking media and you report shit and you're wrong, then there's some consequence to that. If you're a blogger, you can be wrong and there's no consequence. Who gives a shit? It's a dumb fucking blog. And people, it drives me crazy that people don't have that like realization. These guys are like, oh no, we're totally right. Everybody else is wrong.
I was pumped about Spags. I wrote 900 words on WWL how the Saints could have the best defense they've ever had in the Sean Payton era. It's there.
Yeah, we all thought
you
that.
You could Google it, except Channel 4 took off a bunch of articles, like old content, so you can't find it. But I'll admit, it's there. I love the Spags hire, and it was a fucking disaster.
Yeah, we were all like that.
So 2000, and the thing is, like 2012, like, and then, like, in all the chaos, Benson buys the Pelicans for a discount where, like, he bought them.
Yeah.
Like, now they're worth, like, three. Like,
Schwest could that sale fell through.
Yeah. The Pelicans are worth, like, three times what he bought them for. Like, Benson, like, that motherfucker has lived a charmed life. He bought the Saints for $65 million. They're worth, like, $2 billion. He bought the Pelicans for, like, $400 million. The Pelicans, like, if
it was, like, at a police auction, you get the Pelicans.
Yeah. If Benson decided to sell the Pelicans, he could buy them he could sell them to Seattle for like $200 million. It wouldn't even be an issue, as my computer's about to die and I realize that it's not plugged in, but we're good. So that's how drunk I am. I'm like in panic. I'm like, oh my god, my computer's about to die. So but yeah, so like Benson is the and like the state guaranteed the loans for Benson in 1985. Like Benson is the luckiest motherfucker on earth.
Yeah, this is all pure profit.
It is. So all that happens, but probably the thing that made 2012 like just even tolerable, like the Saints got to 5-5, and you had like a glimmer of hope that they were gonna, but they never did. Like Joe Vitt, for me personally, his post game and his Monday press conferences were just it was comedy gold. Like, oh, yeah. It was magical.
And I mean, you know, Vitt, this is the beautiful thing about Vitt taking over. Like, one, he's the interim coach, but this is how much they wanted him to be the coach, right? They put Cromer in to coach the first the interim coach. You're like, no, we gotta have Vitt.
We gotta have the interim. And they're like, think of that. The Saints had an interim coach in 2012.
That was an actual title.
Yeah, and it was like people were like, like it wasn't a big thing. Like it's like say it out loud. The interim. It's crazy.
Yeah,
it's,
and I mean, I told you, you know, the bounty gate that broke Cromer. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we basically never heard from Cromer again. He went off and did some offensive line coaching. Didn't he get arrested for like?
He did. He got
beating up kids on the beach
beating
or something.
Beating up kids on the beach. Like not as bad as Junior, where like he didn't take a belt to a woman, but it was pretty bad. So
yeah,
like,
poor guy. His bounty gate got him, man.
Bounty gate. Right. We'll get into that in a little bit. But like, Vitt was so phenomenal. Like because Vitt, like, it wasn't that he didn't give a fuck. He just told it like it was. He's like I can remember him like after they fell to like 5-7. He's like, we're a soft football team. Like when shit goes wrong, we just can't recover. And I was like, oh my god, like no coach says that on a Monday. But
yeah,
and I did a column for WWL, and they let me. I can't. They never let me run this now, but they let me run it where I was like, Joe Vitt. When he does a press conference, I imagine him coming out in a wife beater with a cigarette in one hand and a scotch in another and just telling it like it is. And like, they let that run. But now they would never let that run. But then, back then, they let it run. I was like, I can't believe I got that joke in. And I was I was so happy. But Vitt was phenomenal. Like, Vitt
he's
so
always
great.
Channeling his inner Pesci. I mean, that's his, you know, that's kind of his That's always his approach anyway in the media. I remember it was after the, I think it was the Broncos game that year. We played the Broncos on the road and they crushed us, I think.
Yeah, they did.
And it was like, I mean, they destroyed us. I think it was a Monday night game maybe. I don't know. But I remember they just destroyed us. And then in Vet after that game in the press conference was just like, just laying it all on the team. It was beautiful.
He's like, yeah, our secondary's terrible. Corey White, I don't know what he was doing. He's like, I don't know what he was doing. Like, and it was like, thank you, Joe Vitt, because we didn't know what he was doing, and you're just confirming it for us. Like, you're the best. Like, I feel like Joe Vitt, he really needed to come out and like go up to like Jeff Duncan and like light my cigarette, Jeff, and then like take a long drag and be like, this fucking.
You might remember this. I can barely remember it right now, but did he accuse Duncan of like, remember he accused Duncan right around Bounty Gate, something with the draft, like draft picks being leaked either to Duncan or from Duncan. You remember?
Yeah, he did. About? I remember that. Like, he's like, you knew the picks. And fans are like, fuck Duncan, because like we don't like Duncan, you know. But it was like Joe Vitt. Like, but the thing is with Joe Vitt, like, I can't feel that bad for him because at the end, like, he was a terrible linebacker coach. He was a terrible linebacker coach.
Yeah, so right. He's like Peyton's consigliere, man. He's a right hand man. He's not there for X's and O's. He's there for fucking muscle.
So, like, the only highlight, I think, of 2012, the only thing I remember as far as, like, game-wise is Drew Brees' touchdown record. He broke the streak, and then it ended, and it's Atlanta on it.
Yeah, right.
Do you remember anything about 2012 besides that? I remember.
Yeah, I remember a lot of the games, but I definitely remember that. I remember he broke it. He threw the touchdown pass to Devery. You know, Devery caught that touchdown, and Devery had caught, like, the most famous college touchdown pass in the – you know, the bluegrass miracle, right? That's like the most famous, like, Louisiana college football catch. And then probably, you know, one of the Saints, you know, most famous catches was him catching Breeze, breaking Unitas' record. But yeah, then he lost the record against the Falcons. And I remember we scored a touchdown in that game, like at the end of the first half, I think, where he threw the touchdown. They got called back, maybe.
Yeah, and then they like botched the clock at the end, and you're like, that was the moment where they were like 5-6 and still kind of in play. And you're like, yeah, that would never happen if Peyton was here. Like,
right. That was a Thursday. That was a Thursday night.
Yeah,
they
botched the clock. You're like, yeah, that's we really miss Sean Payton.
That year was just, I mean.
It was painful because that offense for the Saints was really sneaky good. And they just, like, their defense, like, I remember, like, the only thing I remember about the game is I had flown in for the Panthers game where they had a chance to get to 8-8 and the Panthers just housed.
Yeah, right. That was the last game of the season.
And we're walking out and I'm like, and me and my mom are arguing about the defense, and I'm like, they can't get rid of him after 1 year. They can't just change up the whole defense. She's like, they're terrible. They didn't get any better. She's like, do you remember the Washington game where they got roasted by the rookie quarterback? And this is the last game. I don't see any difference. They need to fire that guy. And I was like, they're not going to fire. And they did.
We need to get your mom a job in the Saints office.
My mom cares about two things. Third downs on defense, if you can't get off the field, and tackling. That's all she cares. Like, if you can't get off the field on third down and you can't tackle, she thinks you're terrible. But the thing is,
that's
like,
pretty high football IQ. That's pretty right,
like,
there.
All the advanced. She's like, fuck those advanced stats. Can you stop them on third down? And it's brilliant. But like, and I was like, there's no way they're firing Spags. And like 2 weeks later, they fired him.
Yeah, I mean, that was just a disaster.
So Bounty Gate. In all of it, like, it's a mess, and the media is just cheerleading Tagliabue, and it's all fine, or Goodell, and like Tagliabue, explain it to people, like Paul Tagliabue, and you know I'm drunk because I've said like about 500 times, but Tagliabue comes in and just cleans it up for Goodell, but in a way exonerates everything.
Yeah, I mean, and here's the thing, man, like, Goodell had finally boned this thing so bad. You know, the NFL owners were like, All right, guys, just call in Tagliabue and let him clean it up. Right? But Tagliabue comes in, and I mean, here's the thing. Let's first remember, Tagliabue is a fucking company man, right? He works for a law firm that represents the NFL. He's a former commissioner.
Yep.
He's a company man, so he's there to do something that's favorable to the NFL. He comes in, he reviews all the body of evidence. He interviews all the relevant people, hears all their testimony, and you know what he does? He's like, yeah, this is bullshit. You guys are free to go. Doesn't hold him responsible for anything, when in virtually any other scenario where if he had any other sort of inkling that this may have been legitimate, he would have punished him for something. But he was like, I'm not putting my name behind this bullshit. And not only does he not do it, he fucking chastises Goodell in his ruling, right? He's like, if you want to change the culture, this is not how you do it, no nuts.
Yeah, and he said he cited like things from the 80s and 90s where like the NFL, like, yeah, they found actual bounties and only fined players and teams like 10 grand.
Yeah, exactly. There was two of them. In like 2007 and 2008 is what it was. They fined the Packers and the Patriots $25,000 each, I think in 2007 and 2008, for having paper for performance systems, which is exactly what the fucking Saints had. Not a goddamn bounty system.
and that's the thing. That's the thing that drives me nuts is that the national media, like, I feel like that's like a New York Times article, and like it's a correction at the bottom. It's like, yeah, Tagliabue avoided it all. Yeah,
you're right.
But it was a precursor to Goodell being incompetent about investigations. Like, he couldn't run Ray Rice well. He couldn't run the flag. And here's the thing that drove me nuts. It's like, Patriot fans and Saints fans should be bonded in brotherhood of Goodell fucking us over. But Patriot fans are such assholes that they're like, well, we didn't do Bounty Gate. We didn't injure people. Like, neither did we, motherfucker. Yeah, we didn't do any of that. We could just bond and agree that Goodell is an asshole, but no, you want to hang bounties that never happened over us.
I mean, that's nonsense. But I mean, Goodell, he did it before Bountygate, because Spygate was all, you know, regardless of what you think about Spygate, the way that he handled it was just absurd, right? He like destroys all the tapes.
Yeah, and the media never questioned him. It's like, you destroyed the tapes.
That's a big fucking deal.
You're like Nixon in Watergate. If Nixon had walked to the Supreme Court building and like started a bonfire.
Yeah,
and you were like, it's cool. No, we trust him. It's like, I get it in the sense of I would respect the media more, Reed, if they would just be like, look, we need our scoops to pay our mortgage. And we're not fucking that up. I'd respect Schefter and King more if they would just say that. Like, I need my scoops, and I can't poke the bear. I'd be like, okay, I get it. Don't tell me that like you're Woodward and Bernstein over this. Like, just I don't want to hear it. You know, and that's what drove me nuts about Bountygate. I wanted the media to either admit they were NFL lackeys or do their job, and they wanted to have like both. They wanted to be NFL lackey and pretend like they were investigating when they weren't. They were just taking.
Most of these guys are basically part of the NFL's marketing arm. You know, the media is their title, but they are to, you know, report the news that the NFL feeds them. So the NFL is the source of the news. They can feed them anything they fucking want. And these guys are just going to report it. And there's not going to be any sort of looking any deeper into it. Somebody feeds me information and I parrot it out to whoever is listening to me. And that's all that it is. And so, you know, these guys aren't even really media. They're spokespeople for the NFL is what they are.
And it just drove me – and that was when I got, like, mad. It just drove me nuts because I felt like what the NFL did to the Saints, like, I get that they wanted to send a message or whatever, and Goodell wanted to be tough on concussion and violence and all that bullshit. But that, like, for Peyton to lose a year and for 2 second-round picks, like, and Loomis to get suspended for 8 games, like, it was total bullshit. And nobody except for Florio called the NFL for what it was. And, like, that was it. Like, nobody else. Yeah. Not Silver, not King, not Schefter, not Ed Werder, who I really like. Like, none of them.
Yeah, none of them. I mean, Dan Le Batard kind of did a little bit. Yeah. Simmons did a little bit. Bill Simmons just calling out the NFL's hypocrisy on it. But, yeah, I mean, Florio was the only person who, you know, continually reported on it and just had some objectivity. Said, this is what the NFL said, and this stuff is all wrong, and here's why it's wrong. And, I mean, you know, that's not bias. It's just basic objective fact. Well, and nobody did that other than him.
Well, the thing for Florio, too, he's a lawyer, so that really helped. So, and sure. Another – so at the end of Bounty Gate, as we sort of get, like – I mean, I wrote a column like on the Monday or Tuesday after it broke, and I was like, this is bad. This is going to wreck the Saints. The Saints, as we know them after 2011, are done. And I really felt that, and people mocked me, and I was like one of the three things I've gotten right. Like,
yeah,
what do you
pretty much true.
But I mean, like, how do you, like, how much did Bounty Gate, do you think, wreck them, or was it just a sense of Sean Payton doesn't really know defense? He's an offensive genius, but he doesn't know defense, so it would have happened anyway. Like, how do you, when you look back, how much does Bounty Gate factor into all the 7-9 mediocrity?
Yeah, I mean, it has. I think it has a relatively meaningful impact. I mean, like, I agree with what you said. You know, part of, you know, is it Bounty Gate or is it Payton's inability to manage a defense and the Saints' inability to run a roster? Definitely. That's part of it too. But Bounty Gate sort of just exacerbated that natural tendency. Like, had the Saints been in place in 2012, they were still a championship contender, and they probably could have had like one more, like a really good year left, kind of like they did in 2011. But that process was going to start anyway. It just started prematurely because of Bounty Gate. You know, you lose a year. The NFL's fragile, man. Things change really fast year to year. And so you remember the end of 2011, man, that Saints team was a fucking juggernaut, man. They were so good. And they would have been good again in 2012 with Payton. You know, maybe they wouldn't have been as good, and maybe the defense would have started showing signs of, you know, just being god-awful bad. But I think they still would have been competitive. But that thing, you know, that process that we've seen play out over the last three seasons, that was coming no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, look, the bad drafts were coming, but I mean, that 2011 team, I mean, they scored 42, 45, you know, 45, and 45 in their last four games before the playoff game against San Francisco. If you want to go back, if you want to go back on the Monday night game, they scored 49, 31, 22, 42, 45, 45, 45, 32. I mean, that team was a – I mean, and people are – you know, people argue with me on Twitter. It's like, I'm like, I would give a – I'm like, I joke. I was like, I would give a kidney for one last 2011. They're like,
I know, man. Yeah, they're, I mean, like, that was an amazing season.
They're like, 2011 ended terrible with Vernon Davis. I'm like, yeah, it ended terrible.
Right.
But Jesus Christ, those 17 regular season weeks were unbelievable.
That's a top five all-time season.
I mean, it was like they were down to the Texans. They were down two scores in the fourth quarter. They won 40-33, and like at the end of it, you were like, they're winning. Like, that offense was it was the Death Star, man. And,
look,
every sport, if unless you win, your season ends badly. Unless you win a world championship. The rest of it, I mean, it's so hard, you know, and the Bounty Gate, the thing that I always, and this may be me, is that my wife calls me a softy, but I guess it's because I have cerebral palsy and I walk with a limp and I only have one guard arm. I'm like, I have this like weird, I feel bad for people. The thing is, I always think about Bounty Gate. The thing that pops in my head first is poor Anthony Hargrove.
Yeah,
that
man.
Poor man, that poor man. He had revitalized his career with the Saints in 2009 and was great and was one of the forgotten people in that Super Bowl team, let me tell you. He got totally fucking – his career was done because of Bounty. Sean Payton is fine. Vilma is fine. Fujita is fine. Loomis is fine. Hargrove was – his career was destroyed.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, he's the only player – that the investigators actually interviewed. So you never remember the NFL was like, you know, we did all this extensive multiple, you know, independent sources and all these interviews and all this stuff. He was the only player that they interviewed. And they identified him, right? Because Hargrove had twice been suspended for substance abuse policy, right? Yep. So he's on his like third strike. Yep. And they got him and they tried to lean on him. And that was the thing with Mary Jo White, where she says, oh, yeah, he admitted to all this stuff when he didn't. And they continually lied about him because they had all the leverage on him. And yep. they're like, and even if he went along with, you know, if you don't go along with it, basically your career's over. And basically that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, so that's – I mean, and that's weird. I think of Hargrove all the time. Like, everybody else, look, granted, they lost years and money, but Hargrove got screwed over the most. And
sure.
It's just, like, the thing is to me is I look at – like, I don't know. I guess for me, Bounty Gate, I feel like it I don't know what they would have been. I feel like the golden age of Saints football – if we're honest, it ended when Shane Graham kicked that field goal in Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
and they won the road playoff game. Like, yeah. and people will say, "Oh, it ended in Seattle."
Gatorade and Popeyes, bitch.
Yeah, you know, people will say, "Oh, it ended when Colston threw the pass." Well, I like to be optimistic, and my memories be positive. Like that's when the Saints' golden age ended. Maybe they can revitalize it with, you know, resuscitated or whatever this year. I don't know. But
yeah,
to me, like,
but, right.
you know, I just, it's so, it's, I mean, and to me, like, the media, they sort of got wise to Goodell. A lot of people have, like you said, Lebatard and Simmons. But I feel like Goodell is, like, he is, I get why he makes, like, $30, $40 million a year. Because anything that goes bad with the NFL, they don't blame the owners, they blame him.
Yeah, he's a hatchet man in the shield.
But I just feel like he is so awful at his job. And do you think history will be kinder to the Saints in Bounty Gate, or will it be like a gold star for Goodell? Because I don't know what it's going to be.
I mean, I would say, honestly, I don't think it would be, you could say it would be a gold star for Goodell, just because I don't think, based on his body of performance, that anybody would give him credit for anything like that. But I still do think the Saints will be looked upon maybe negatively or, you know, wrongly about what happened during Bounty Gate. I don't think, you know, people or the league will generally absolve them. I mean, some of these guys, they still stick to it. Duncan and Peter King and a lot of these guys, they still stick into the story, right? You know, they still believe that the Saints were, you know, targeting and injuring players. And, I mean, here's an important thing to remember with Bounty Gate, Ralph. I mean, this is the main fucking thing. The NFL punished the Saints for conduct detrimental to the league. That is an off-field transgression, right? They never punished anybody on the Saints team for anything that related to on-field play. If the Saints were injuring players, they would have been fucking punished for that. But they weren't injuring players, so they couldn't be punished for that.
Exactly.
So the NFL suspended them for conduct detrimental, which is an off-field violation.
No.
That's how you know – that simple fact right there is how you know that Bounty Gate was a bunch of horse shit.
Yeah, and the thing is the only thing the NFL did right was they rolled it out like a steam train. But the NFL, like, that's built in. Like, I feel like me or you could have done that because the NFL is set up like that. Their TV partners, their media partners, like, it was – looking back at it, like, it was like kicking an extra point for the NFL.
Yeah, yeah. It worked like a charm for them.
So I am completely shit-faced, and I'm looking at this. I'm glad it recorded. You know, and here's the thing. Like, with Bounty Gate, I guess to me, I so want the Saints to, if they could just have one more run at it. And the thing is, I think Bounty Gate, whether Sean Payton wins again with the Saints maybe or wins somewhere else, like, I think that is keeping – like, he's never getting in the Hall of Fame. Like, he could – like,
no.
Literally –
I mean,
like,
he'd have to do something spectacular the second half of his career to overcome that.
Yeah, and I think that's a shame. The good thing is, like, Drew Brees, it won't affect. But like, I think Bounty Gate is a bunch – like you said, it's a bunch – it's – and the thing is, like, people don't want to hear – like, Peter King's, and they don't want to hear that. But I just, man, this has been remarkable, but at the end of it, I'm like, in the middle of it, I was excited and happy, but now I'm like angry. Like, I remember, I want to punch Goodell in the balls. Like, it just, like, I feel like the more I think about it, like 2012, it should have been another playoff fun season for the Saints. And like Goodell ripped that and took it away from us. And, you know, as we're staring a fifth 7-9 season out of 6 years because of it. And I just feel like the golden age for the Saints should have been 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13. And Goodell stole that from us.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And we might live to be 80, 90 years old and never see another fucking quarterback and team as good as Drew Brees. And we got cheated out of a year. And that's the thing, as a sports fan, to take one of those years away from me is as horrible a sin as you could commit.
Right. I mean, you could take any season away, but when you take one away where you got a fucking Hall of Fame quarterback in his prime for a franchise that has historically struggled, that's a kick in the fucking nuts, man.
Yeah. It is, and I told people on Twitter that by the end of this, it would just be me and you ranting and raving and singing Irish ballads against saying "fuck Goodell." And Reed, that's how it's ended. People, go and buy his book, Bread and Circuses. He documents Bountygate in a way you'll be enraged, but you'll laugh, and it'll be good. It's 5 years away. Go and buy his book. He'll get like. You make like a dollar off of every buy, right?
Yeah, so, I think I make like 4 cents per book.
Good. But it makes him feel good. He works. The book is, and I don't just say this because he came in the podcast, it's phenomenal. Go to Amazon, Bread and Circuses, buy it. Okay, we're done. British lady, take us out.
Thanks to all of our Saints Happy Hour listeners whose donations made Drunk Saints history possible. Until next time, remember, surviving Saints history is hard. That's why God made alcohol.